Back here on Earth, it's Olympic season, of course, but how are athletes from cooler countries, and by that I mean less thermally challenged, going to cope with these Brazilian temperatures? It may be winter south of the equator, but temperatures are still predicted to reach 26 degrees Celsius in the afternoons. How is this going to affect the competitors, and what do their bodies do to keep cool? Well, Dan Gordon is an exercise physiologist, but he is also uniquely an athlete himself. He's represented Great Britain in three sports in the past, and he holds a world record. Dan, what is it? What is the world record?
The world record is in track cycling. I still hold the outdoor world record for a kilometre time trial.
So you must know all about handling the heat. So why is thermal situations a challenge for people out there in situations like this?
Yeah, it's an important question. I mean, the biggest challenge to body's functioning is heat. If you think about muscle changing length and therefore generating force, 75% of the energy that's produced is lost in the form of heat. So we're producing vast amounts of heat, and then we put somebody into a hot environment. It really puts the body into a state of enormous compromise when you're trying to compete and you're trying to generate very fast and rapid muscle contractions.
So it's not just dealing with actually having very good musculature and being highly trained, it's also being able to cope with the thermal stress of how to dump enough heat back into the environment to keep your body running efficiently in these situations.
Exactly. And that's the key to success. If you imagine you go to an Olympic Games and most of the athletes are of a fairly similar standard. If you take the top 10 in the world, they're a fairly similar standard. So one of the big factors that really determines the winner from the loser is the person who can cope with the heat and dissipate the heat the most effectively.
But can you train that, Dan?
You can. I mean, you can train it in a number of ways. One of the ways is you can use what's called acclimation. So acclimation is where we put athletes or individuals into heat chambers. And in the heat chamber, you can expose them to the temperature you're going to get in the local environment, and the body will physically adapt. Or you can acclimatise somebody where you actually go to the hot environment and you're there for a number of days prior to whatever the competition is going to be.
And what sorts of changes or adaptations does the body make to your physiology in order to enable you to become more efficient at losing or controlling thermal stress?
Okay, now this is the really cool bit.
If you go into
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go into hot environment, the first thing that actually happens is that you get an increase in the skin colour. The skin goes quite red. And the reason for that is that the circulation is being redirected to the skin. The blood has a fantastic capability of dissipating heat from the body. So it's taking it from the core and dissipating it away from the body. So we get a redistribution of blood flow.
In most holidaymakers' case, that's just because of the local vino. But we'll assume these
possibly
athletes are not
And in my case, it's just natural sunburn.
So you bring the blood close to the surface of the skin, and because the blood is hot, you've got a hot thing close to the skin surface that's going to radiate
It's going to radiate the heat away from the body. But that's quite an inefficient process because you're now redistributing the blood away, and it's only a finite amount of blood. And of course, the blood carries the oxygen, and we have this compromise. So what we know
is it's not going to the muscles.
It's not going to the muscles, and it's being redistributed away from other organs. So what happens is over time, as you start to expose somebody to the environment, and this is the bit that I think throws people, is you start to sweat more. Sweating is actually, we often think that's kind of a bad response. Actually, it's a fantastic response because sweating is a far more efficient process in terms of that redistribution of blood flow. So the blood flow is down-regulated.
So you can train yourself to sweat more?
You can train yourself to sweat more.
How?
Well, you do it by exposing people to those hot conditions.
And do you get more sweat glands?
You don't get more sweat glands. It's just that the body learns through that exposure to not get the redistribution of blood flow, and then therefore promote the sweat response.
So you're substituting sweating for rushing blood to the skin surface.
Correct.
So how much can someone sweat?
Well, I mean, it really does depend. But I mean, you can see athletes losing, and we're talking litres. But you also get individuals who don't sweat a lot. There were a lot of athletes in Athens we called them dry sweaters. They really didn't look like they were losing much. But then you have a lot of athletes who sweat vast amounts. So it's very individual, even in people who are acclimatised to the conditions.
And how long will it take? Say you took me as a relatively untrained, at least in warm temperatures, individual, and took me to Rio. What would you do to me in order to get me as acclimatised as I could be to cope with those temperatures and boost my sweat rate?
Okay, so the key is making the most of the time. So in a normal situation, it takes about 10 days to acclimatise to anything about 26 to 35, 36 degrees C, about 10 days. We can speed that process up by doing acclimation prior to the event. So if we were doing acclimation every day for an hour to 2 hours a day, we could probably reduce the acclimatization period down to about 8 days.
Okay. Now, is there evidence that people who grow up in these countries, so if I am from Ethiopia, I'm very good at marathon running, not just because I've got good ways of extracting oxygen from my muscles, but because I've evolved to have very good, very strict temperature control. Is that the case as well?
That is the case as well. So, you know, unfortunately, the UK athletes had their time with London. We did well with London. It was a natural environment. We're now at a natural disadvantage. You know, it's no doubt that the Kenyans, the Moroccans, the Ethiopians are at that advantage. A, because they've got, as you say, great ability in terms of exercising and competing, but they've got that natural ability to dissipate heat and are really good sweaters.
Well, they say a team always plays best at home, don't they? It's certainly true in that case.
Very much.
I've always joked that the Olympics is more a trial of genes and genetics than it is really about anything else. Would you agree with that? I mean, it is basically your genetics against someone else's, isn't it?
It is in the end, isn't it? And I mean, it's no doubt that's what it comes down to. And if you look at a bell curve, and we're right at the far extreme of the bell curve, you're at the extreme of that extreme. And it really is about these extraordinarily genetic specimens. And it's a massive, massive component in terms of everything that's going on.
Dan Gordon from Anglia Ruskin, thank you very much. Thank you also to Katie Hassel and also to Rolls-Royce, who gave us access to their precision casting facility.